Okay, so I guess I'll just read the submitted questions in the order that they arrived. I don't really know the order. Okay, first question is, using a microwave to prepare for Pesach beforehand and on Pesach, must it be a microwave specifically purchased for Pesach, or is there some way to kasher or use the existing microwave? Okay, so it's for many years we didn't not kasher whole from kashering the microwave, but my father recently said you can follow the there are guidelines that the several agencies put out, the OU, they have different guidelines, but basically he holds you can kasher the microwave. So whenever you're kashering anything, generally speaking, you want to wait 24 hours since the last time you've used it. That makes all of the tam, what we call lifgam, and that removes certain problems that could arise. And also the object has to be clean. It doesn't have any of the isser on it, because you can't kasher the substance of the isser. You only kasher the absorbed tam that's in the kli. So basically, I think, you know, you'll take a look at the details, but more or less, the principle that we use for kashering anything is what we call kibolo kach polto. That the way it was absorbed, that's the way it is removed. So for the microwave, the basic process is taking a cup of water for a few minutes. You have to see the details of it, but basically steaming up the entire microwave, and that will essentially do to it what was done to it. You know, so you'll have a kibolo kach polto. Now, I guess the one question would be the glass tray at the bottom, because the Ashkenazic minhag is not to kasher glass for Pesach. For the most part, so I guess you could either replace it, or maybe you could just cover it well with saran wrap. I don't know if that would be feasible with it, but those would be the options. So if it wasn't used with hot, they do that, like for drinking glasses and things like that. So that's okay. So yeah, you don't need one that's specially bought for Pesach, but you do have to kasher for Pesach if you're going to use it. Okay.
Question?
Yep.
If you're covering a plate, you need two layers, so two layers of plastic wrap or something like that, in case it spills and gets wet and whatever.
Well, depends how well you covered it with the first layer. But
I
know it's the idea, right? Okay, so right. So let me just try to express, huh? Okay, so let's just think about the way it works. So the principles, I'll try to give the answers with some of the principles behind it, so maybe it'll be easier to understand and to remember. But don't try to apply them. So one of the principles is that two dry surfaces, right, two kalim that are dry, don't transfer any tam. So, as we were saying, if you have two kalim that are dry and they come in contact with each other, so there's no transfer between the kalim. So I think that's the idea of the double wrap, that you want to at least ensure that the two layers together stay dry. So nothing, even if something would fall on the outside layer, it wouldn't, so to speak, transfer tam to the inside layer, because it's supposed to be two dry layers. So over here, we're worried about the if we're worried about that glass tray, and you know, theoretically, if one layer covers it and sort of seals it, I don't know if you'd have to go on the bottom, because nothing would come in contact with. I guess you mean if it steams up, yeah. So I guess you'd want to cover it all around, and therefore it would remain dry in between the tray and the outside layer. So, you know, I guess, yeah, it's a good idea. Okay. Sure. This is like a Q&A, yeah. That was just to explain. There was the differences between maybe just a preliminary remark over here. The difference between kashrus on Pesach and during the year is more or less one of degree. We have during the year we rely on bittul, right? And during Pesach we don't permit any bittul. So, you know, normally during the year there are two kulas that we have that if you did something wrong, most of the time you can, there are heterim. So the two heterim that we employ during the year don't apply to Pesach. So one of them is bittul, and there's no bittul on Pesach, whether it's two of the same kinds of foods, two different kinds of foods. So, you know, the fact that you might have during the year, Shiloh, say, a little, my spoon, I mixed something, you know, and then they'll say, well, how big was it? How much soup were you mixing? How big was the spoon? None of those questions are going to be relevant over here. Any amount is going to create an isser. And the second problem is that during the year, we have a concept of, mentioned before, nosin tam lefgam, that if something is a day old already, like a fleishig spoon that you mixed a milk soup with, but if the spoon was a day old, or the pot was if the spoon was a day old already, so we say, well, that won't create any isser, because isser only can only be created with a good taste, not with a deficient bad taste. So, but on Pesach we don't have that heter either. So we're machmir. No bittul, and we're even machmir on old kalim. So that's why when you're coming into Pesach, you really don't want to take chances, so to speak, because you don't have those safeties to fall back on. Like, you know, during the year, of course, l'chatchila we're careful, but we always, you know, there are a lot of bidyeveds that are mutter. Chometz on Pesach, there are very few bidyeveds that are mutter, so certainly have to be more careful going in. Yeah. Right, I'm talking in terms of chametz, correct? Correct. Okay. All right, second question. Spices. I buy new ones for Pesach, but I want to prepare some meats, chickens beforehand and freeze. Can I use spices I already have? Okay, so certainly, so this gets into a little bit of a detail about what we were speaking about before. So a minute ago we just said that Pesach is different because we don't have any bittul, and we say nosin tam lefgam is usur, right? But that's on Pesach itself. Okay, that's if the mixture occurs during the chag. Okay, but any mixture from beforehand, since it's not yet usur, we still do have the heterim of bittul b'shishim, you know, of bittul, and nosin tam lefgam being mutter. So that's a very important thing to realize, and a lot of the questions, maybe we can head off some of the questions, a lot of the questions that come up, you know, are buying things that maybe don't have a specific hashgacha for Pesach. So the general rule is, you know, buy them beforehand so that if there's nothing that you're really worried about in terms of an ingredient, but maybe there's a chance of a small amount of something that's problematic, so we can rely on bittul as long as it was purchased before yontif. Now we're machmir that it actually has to be owned by a Jew before yontif begins, not just that it was in existence. As there are different sheets, but that's the way my father holds it. It has to be what's called as no dahatarovus, that it's. The mixture is known. So therefore, anything that was prepared beforehand, and if there's simply a concern, maybe there was a little bit of chametz wasn't, maybe there's a minute amount. So while during Pesach we would be strict about that, if it were from beforehand, that would not create an Isser. And so too, if it was cooked in a pot that was an Eina Ben Yomo, that also would not render it unfit for Pesach. Now, you have to think these things through very carefully, because let's say you did cook something in a, you have to be sure that it was an old pot, but let's say you were sure it was cooked in an Eina Ben Yomo, day old pot that was maybe used for chametz. So while that would not be a problem to eat that food on Yom Tov, because since it's beforehand, we can rely on that heter of Nosin Tam of Gam. In other words, it doesn't awaken during the Yom Tov. Those are only dinim that apply during the Yom Tov itself. But obviously, you can't keep it in that pot that had the Eino Ben Yomo Tam, because then on Yom Tov, you'll be having some addition of the Tam Lufgam during the Chag, and there's no Bittel. So you'll see, that would be the advice you find in the halachic advice would be, if you did cook something like that, you'd have to put it into a kosher Pesach container and keep it for Yom Tov. You can't keep it in a non-kosher Pesach container. Yeah. So lechatchila, you shouldn't do these things, but if something like that happened and it was an Eino, and it was an Eino Ben Yomo, right, then b'dieved, then if it was already done, you can use it. Now, of course, there are just a couple of caveats. Whenever we're dealing with the heter of Eino Ben Yomo, it doesn't apply to things that are spicy, right? If you cut an onion with a knife, we know that we treat that like a good tam. So, when we say that Eino Ben Yomo is good, it only obviously is only in the cases where Eino Ben Yomo works the rest of the year. So you have to be careful. I'm just trying to give you some of the basic principles, but if there are specific questions, you'd have to, you should inquire, because there might be some details that you're not aware of. But anyway. So the spices that you use during the year, what is the concern? What is the concern? I mean, assuming that the spice itself is not a concern. So the concern is that maybe it was used in close proximity to chametz, and maybe you're seasoning your chicken soup with the matzo balls, and the steam from that would go into the spice. So steam is considered like the thing itself, and it would make it some degree, would give it some degree of chametz. So you shouldn't use the spices that you had all year long. For preparations for Pesach. If it was done and you're sure the way it was used, I mean, we'll have to talk about that, but you could, there is still the fact of the matter is interesting halacha is, although we say like spices are never bottle, right? Or not bottle in a thousand, let's say. The regular idea of bittel b'shishim is we say that the thing gives no flavor beyond a 60th, beyond 1/260, right? A 61st. But we know that spices give flavor far past that. So if a spice became, let's say, had some steam of chametz that absorbed into the spice. So, although the spice has that flavor, we do say that it still has the bittel of the original, we treat the bittel, we go by what made it us, or we don't go by the spice itself. So the salt itself, for instance, would, even though salt itself wouldn't be bottle in a thousand, but this is just a flavor was imparted to the salt, but that added the flavor is not going to be. Even if you hold chaticha nasa, okay.
You mean bottle in the
food,
not in the spice. In the food, you put the spice in the
tub. Well, yeah. So, truth of the matter is, I mean, for the most part, there's probably, the realistic concern is very minuscule. So, maybe it's even bottled into the spice itself. But I would say b'dieved, it would certainly have been bottled into the food. That would have to be before Pesach. Yeah, this is only the question was if you're using it before Pesach. On Pesach, you should definitely get different spices because you don't know if it's bottled in the spice. and then it would present the problem during Yontif. Now let me just add one thing, because it's important to keep in mind all the details. Although we said that things that are batel beforehand are permissible, it's limited really to liquids. Okay, to things that are like a liquid and a liquid mixed together. So, for instance, if I had, crumbs, let's say I had matzah meal, and a little bit of chametz stick of matzah meal got mixed in, but very little. Relax. A little, very little. And I'll say, well, let's say, okay, it was a 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, right? So it was before Pesach. I have a bittel of two things. But the thing is, that's not considered, the bittel that we consider to be permanent, so to speak, and not reawakened during the Yom Tov, is like a mixture of liquids, that there's no existence, there's no physical existence to the separate, distinct existence of the thing itself. So, for instance, I don't know what nowadays, but we used to always buy the milk before Yom Tov, because of some of the vitamin additives maybe were derived from chametz. But since it's a liquid, and it's less than 60, than 1 in 61, then it would be batel from before, if you bought it from before. But you have to be careful. You can't rely on, this doesn't work if it's solids, because the solid still exists, and then when you use it on Yom Tov, that little bit is going to give a little bit of time into the food, and it's not nullified as a thing because it's a separate existence, and therefore it will create a a little bit of a mashu and chametz asur b'mashu on Pesach. Okay, so that would be the problem. Yeah.
When we said that the bittel has to happen before Pesach, are we talking about the onset of Yom Tov, or are we talking about
the night. During the 6 hours from on Erev Yom Tov, there still is bittel,
right.
Even though there's an isser. From 6 hours on, there still is bittel. Yeah. So fruits and vegetables, right. So fruits and vegetables, certainly not a problem. I mean, even ones that you don't peel, you can still buy and. But there's nothing there. In other words, we also have a rule, and it still applies, even during Pesach, we say, Ichzuki Yisra lo machzikinem. We don't start out with an assumption everything is usher and then prove to me that it's not usher. But anyway, fruits and vegetables, what could be, you're eating it, you're seeing it, you're looking at it, there's nothing that's observable that's any problem.
Because you're saying the ownership thing.
Yeah, but that's when you have a mixture. No, we're talking about mixtures, some kind of a mixture. A vegetable, there's no, it's not mixed with anything.
There are people outside of that.
You can certainly wash it off. There's nothing to worry about. Yeah.
My
green beans. I'll just tell you what my father said the Shabbos, that Rav David said. It's more string beans. He says more string than beans. So he held it was not kitnios, and Rav Moshe also held that peanuts are not kitnios. I'm going a little out of order. Kitnios is batel for sure, but not lechatchila. But it's batel if it falls into your food. It's batel barov. Oh, no. Now here's a question about doing bedikas chametz early on different parts of your house, and then your husband may exclude checking those again. Well, the women also check the doobie doos. All right. So,
I go through all my toy bins and my whole pockets.
Okay, so the question is like this. Now, if you clean the house ahead of time, 30 days before the Chag, 30 days before Pesach, there's a mitzvah. The mitzvah of bedikas chametz is chal. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So you have a mitzvah already of bedikas chametz. Now the only question is, have you performed that mitzvah? Now you're supposed to wait, of course, until the correct zman. But let's say somebody, for some reason, did a full bedikas chametz ahead of time. All right. So what can you do? You already did the bedikas chametz. But the question is, what qualifies as bedikas chametz? Okay. Does having a cleaning lady clean your house qualify as bedikas chametz? No. So the mitzvah of bedikas chametz is a specific mitzvah and has a specific structure, and it has to be done with at night in a dark environment, and with a focused with a small focused light, like a nair or a flashlight, preferably. So just a general daytime cleaning, it does not qualify. You haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Now the question is, what areas, what places need bedikas chametz? So your husband is saying that it goes by rooms, and like a bin, for instance, doesn't have a mitzvah of bedikas chametz on the bin. So if you clean those bins out, you know, even in the daytime, and you just know there's no chametz in there, then you're fine, because they don't have the specific mitzvah of a mokum that you have to be chametz on. You just have to know there's no chametz in there, and that you can do. But just having, you know, just cleaning up does not qualify as bedikas chametz. Now you are supposed to clean the house before you do bedikas chametz, so that you can do an easy bedikas chametz. It's hard to do bedikas chametz when there's stuff all over the place. But that itself is not bedikas chametz. Right, so you can go through your cupboards and your refrigerators,
and then at night you'll
do bedikas chametz in the.
Attached to the house.
We'll get back to you on the cupboards, but that's what I thought. Yeah. So where do you have to check? You have to check any room that you bring chametz into. So that includes, obviously, places you eat, prepare food. But even if you, have a midnight snack or even rooms. Well, we don't have these things so much anymore, but like rooms you go into, retrieve things during the meal, maybe you are eating on the way in and out, things like that. But like an attic or something like that, where you don't bring the food. The problem is with kids. If kids bring food all over the place, that's the problem. So you're going to do a bedikas chametz. You have to do, like, let's say your kids are going to be sleeping, so it's not going to be able to do bedikas chametz when they're sleeping. So you could. You could do a bedikas chametz early, let's say the night before, or if it's dark in there, you can do it with a flashlight and make sure. But you have to be sure that no one comes into that room again, and then you'll do bedikas chametz on the rest of the house at night.
You do it during the day with
shutting light. Bidyevet, I mean, it would still qualify as a maisa bedika if it's dark. Yeah. So the question is, where do you have to check? So your question, Tamar, was like, let's say, do you have to move your refrigerator in order to check, right? So the halach is, you know, places where you can reach, that you access during the year. Those are places that require checking. There's two things. Let's just clarify. There's two points. One question is, was chametz possibly brought there, right? And the other question is, will it be accessible during Yom Tov? So, for instance, let's say under the refrigerator. So, what would possibly be there? Maybe some crumbs that got swept aside, right? Right. So the Gemara says that when you do bedika, you have to do bittel. So the Gemara says, why do you have to do bittul if you already did bedika? So the Gemara is goes through some possibilities. And maybe you'll say it's because of the crumbs that got left behind. So the Gemara says, those are already bittul. You don't need to, they're bittul by themselves. So the question is, does that mean that you don't have to do bedika on crumbs? If the Gemara is saying, if you did bedika, you still have to do bittul. The Gemara is trying to figure out why, and its first possibility is the crumbs. So why are there crumbs if you did bedika? I believe the Rush says that it's because it's just not possible to get every crumb. But the implication is you do have to really try to get whatever you can. You, You can't just say, well, is it crumb? I don't have to do bidika. You do have to try to get what you can, but you can't get everything, right? So whatever you don't get after bidika is automatically batal, because it's just something that's minuscule and didn't even, you didn't take note of. But I would say similarly, you know, but do you have to now move the refrigerator to get maybe there's a crumb under the refrigerator? So that would be a question of, is it considered a place where you bring food in? And it's not a place that you bring food in because you can't reach it. It's not a usable place. And I guess the only question would be if you knew for sure there was a kezias of chametz under there, right? And it's... but then you say, okay, but I won't access it. Like the Gemara is the case. Let's say I have chametz and a pile of rocks falls on top of it, you know. And it's just impossible to, it's not accessible at all. So is that considered like just, destroyed in a certain sense? So I don't know if it's that much over here, because you really sometimes do. There are times where you have to, if you ask Robbie's here, you have to check something, maybe pull out the refrigerator. But it would seem to me that you wouldn't have to do it, because it's not a place where you bring the chametz. And anything that's there is going to be a very minute amount. It's bittul already. You say the bittul, and there's not like a chashash that you're going to chance upon a gluski off underneath your, something that's actually, that you might be able to eat. Yeah. Part of the reason for doing bedikas chametz is we're worried that that since chametz is something that we don't normally have a reaction towards, like iser, like chaz, or things like that, we have a natural sort of taboo attitude towards it. We're not worried that if you have chaz or non-kosher food in your house that you're accidentally going to eat it, because you sort of have a built-in barrier towards doing that. But we say chametz is something that you eat all the time. We don't have that natural built-in self-checking to prevent ourselves from eating it thoughtlessly. You wouldn't thoughtlessly eat a ham and cheese sandwich. It's not something that's even a food in your thinking. But chametz, things like that all year long are. So during the year, we say, on Pesach, even though bittul would really remove the problem of bayira bayimatzeh, but we're worried that since you're used to eating things like that, don't keep it around, so because you might come to eat it. And like we were saying before, I forgot to mention before, the reason why we have so many chumras on bittul and nosin tam of gam is because there's an isser karis associated with chametz. So we're extra careful about the chametz. So part of the reason for the bedika is that it's not accessible. If it's near you, accessible, you might accidentally come to eat it. So that's why the Gemara discusses cases where it's inaccessible. Are we worried that, well, maybe it'll fall off of the rafters and hit the floor and then you'll find it? But I think if it's something that is, the situation is it's not going to remove itself and it's not accessible at all, and it's not really... you're saying it's really a good piece of food. I don't know. It's a good question. I guess you'd have to say, is the question of would you consider it like a permanent... do you consider the place of that refrigerator like a permanent fixture? And basically, underneath it is like inaccessible. I don't know. It's a good question. You could just take a little stick and sweep it under? All right, that's a good idea. I would suggest that. Okay. It's a question. It's a good question. Look, you have to get rid of all the chametz. You have to get rid of all the chametz, even if it's in your garbage pail. But if you ask me about like the schmutz at the bottom of the garbage pail, I don't think that's... Yeah, for sure. No, just because you put the food in your garbage pail doesn't make it garbage. Doesn't make it not chametz. But don't they generally empty the garbage pails when they take up the garbage?
Yeah, the problem is the bag ripped open.
Right. Yeah. So traces of wheat. If it says may contain traces of wheat, you can certainly keep that. Now, how wet does the meat have to be for the Seder? Right. No. So we don't. We don't eat roasted meat at the Seder because it looks like Korban Pesach. So that's the source of the minhag, not the roasted meats. It applies to chicken as well. But the question is, what if it's, so there's a machlokas in the Achronim, what if it's roasted in a pan? Meaning, say, you're not putting any liquid in, but in the pan itself, it's going to, you know, so the juices will collect. So that's called slikeder. So since the reason for the iser is that it shouldn't be like the Korban Pesach, it shouldn't appear like you're trying to replicate the Korban Pesach would not be permitted cooked in that fashion. So that's why many Achronim, I saw the Aruch HaShulchan is makel on all slikeder. He says he doesn't see why there should be any chumra like that at all. But we generally are machmir that way. But it would have to be that it's dry, that you put it in dry. So if you put it in with some liquids, any liquids, sauces, anything that it's going to be cooking in another substance in the pan, that would be okay. Yeah.
To eat it.
Yeah, I know there are a lot of chumers. The Achronim say even if you do bishul and then sli, it's aser. So if you seared it, that would be like a tzli afterwards. So you'd have to cook it in some kind of a sauce. Yeah. Flour is a problem because they wet it in the process of milling it and storing it. So flour is chametz. Quinoa is not chametz or kidneys. There was a time where they were saying that it's processed in the facility with wheat. And therefore, you would have to check it beforehand. I don't know what the metzias is now, but it's you should do that. What?
It has OUP on it. So
oh, okay. If it doesn't, then spread it out and look through it, and you'll be able to see. It's very obvious if there's something that's in there.
What?
If there's something that's in there. Now, they were saying when this was a few years ago, they were saying when the places that they process it are used to process wheat. So it could be kernels. No, it's not a flour. It'd be a kernel. You'd see like a grain. So you can check it. Kidneys is mutter in hanah, so you could feed it to your animals. That's for sure. What else? The kidneys question also. We got the peanuts and the string beans and the green beans. Someone had a question about if they use kidneys, they're feeding kidneys to the baby. In a with the bottle, what was the question here? Can they clean that bottle in the sink with the kosher Pesach dishes? So I mean, you should just clean it in cold water, wash it out with cold water, and keep it separate. I mean, b'di'evit obviously it would not create a problem because kidneys is bottle, so it wouldn't create a problem b'di'evit, but l'chatchil, I guess you should keep it separate and clean it with cold water, so that there's no tam, there's no blios, there's nothing that's going to transfer. Better to the water is if you can tolerate the water with your hand, then it's not hot enough to create any problems. Okay.
You can clean it.
Look, yeah. The, what would be the problem exactly? I'm trying. What would be the problem? What are you worried about? That what? That there's kidneys in the where?
In the milk. In the formula.
In the milk, but the milk. Okay, so you rinse out the milk with cold water, rinse out the sink.
Other stuff in the sink, right? I think that, and the sink itself. I think once you cause the sink,
should be worried. All right. So what? So let's say you had the kidneys milk in the bottle. Is that the case?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So your mother said, take the drink that goes on Pesach.
All you would need to do is it, you can get rid of the milk itself with cold water, and then wash it all out in the sink, and then you can clean the bottle with hot water.
Cold water, yeah.